Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Hello, world. You are listening to Living by Design, and I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we are here with you for the next 60 minutes on the Living by Design show, and we are finishing out our March theme of financial fitness, and I'm really, really excited about that topic because I know that's something that everyone needs help with. Now, just a couple of things I want to talk about before I bring my guest on the line. Last week, we interrupted our theme to have a listener appreciation show, and boy, what a listener appreciation show it was. Tony, I received so many email notes after that show was over. Well, I received a lot before the show, but after it was over, I received tons more. And Don Diamont wanted me to let everyone know that he really, really appreciated your love and your support and all the calls and everyone that joined us on that show. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much from him and from myself and Tony as well. So if you did not have a chance to hear that show and join us last week, please check out the download. It's still available for you to check out the archive. It was a great show. And then I also want to let you know that beginning next week, we will be entering our April theme of Get Motivated. Actually, our April and May theme will be Get Motivated, because you guys need to get motivated. Nothing can happen in your life unless you get motivated. Right, Tony?
Absolutely.
Yep, especially with the financial fitness part. We're giving you all the tools to change your finances, so we want you to get motivated to do it. And I wanted to end out, Tony, as you know, because we've talked about this, but I wanted to end out our financial fitness, our last show for the month of March, with a very, very big heavyweight person. And this individual is sure enough that, and more. He's been on my show before. It's been a while since he's been on my show, but William R. Pattison, he is ranked as the number one business motivational speaker by ranking.com. He's a three-time award-winning lecturer and international best-selling author who uses his trademark approach, the Barron's Solution, to coach, train, and motivate small business owners, executives, sales professionals, and investors. And he's been on my show before, and he absolutely knows his stuff. He's an international recognized business coach and wealth coach who has written over 250 articles and has been a featured guest on over 500 television and radio programs. He's a business and financial expert for CBS and XM Satellite Radio. So he's pretty much all over the place. He's won tons of awards. It actually says here that he's the CEO. He's the chairman and CEO of the Warkoffer. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, William. Let me know when you come on the line. Warkoffer Capital Group, WCG. He leads their corporate strategy and development consulting efforts. So his bio is so long and so extensive, Tony. I am going to bring William on the line, and I'm going to let him go ahead and just, you know, say a couple of things on his bio. William, hello. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Kathy and Tony, it's an absolute pleasure to be back on the show. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well,
good to have you back.
Yes, it is great to have you back, because I know the last show was one of my best shows when I had you on, and as you heard me state before I brought you on the line, I wanted to end out my March financial fitness theme with a bang, and who better to do that than you?
Well, you're both very kind. Thanks again, and I'll do my best to deliver on, I'll probably say, thousands of dollars of great free information that will really help people transform their lives and transform their businesses. So people always know I love giving away a lot of great free stuff, so I'll be pointing to a lot of great free resources that people can take advantage of, as well as some higher-level resources that will help them as well.
That's great. That's great. Now, William, when you were on the show before, I think we had just entered the recession. I think it had just kind of started. So, I mean, we're pretty much deep into it now. So I know you have been hit from all different angles, all different sides, from people wanting your help and begging for you to tell them what to do. Rescue me, please, please rescue me.
Yes, well, there are definitely two sides to the coin, and I guess from a pure economics definition, some people would say that we've come out of a recession, meaning two negative quarters of gross domestic product. But for many people, they're still out of work. They're still searching for those opportunities. Many have had their incomes cut by 20, 30, even 50%, and a lot of people are looking for some answers. But on the opposite side of that coin, you also have a lot of people who are taking advantage of this situation in a way that allows them to live their dream, live their purpose. And you talked a lot about that with your books and so forth. But this is really an opportunity. So I always encourage people to look at it from a positive framework as opposed to the negative, woe is me, let me look for ways in which I can cut costs, but instead transform that ideology to say, how can I increase and sustain my income and profitability? Those are the big questions that you want to ask. How can I take advantage of the opportunities, not how can I cut costs and wait out a recession or an economic downturn?
And you are so very right. And since you started it out that way, I'm going to just go ahead and jump right into the mindset portion of what we're going to talk about this evening, because we know that the mindset is very, very important. So with you being an internationally recognized business and wealth coach, and you've had tons and tons of clients, major corporations who you've helped, what can you say to our listeners from a mindset and belief perspective that they can actually relate to, that, you know, they can say, oh, okay, I'm just a little old me. So, yes, that really does relate to me.
Well, we found that as we looked at a lot of different clients, we work with clients, as you mentioned, that run multimillion-dollar corporations, to clients who have negative net worths and who are struggling financially and literally have a very difficult time paying their next bill. And what we found is that there were some significant differences in the mindsets of the clients who struggle financially and those who are running very successful companies. And it had nothing to do with things that you might typically imagine, things like education, things like their financial resources to begin with. A lot of it has to do with the mindset. And when we look at some of those psychological barriers and conditions that impact someone's financial and business success, we tend to see things like the fear. And that fear may be the fear of loss. And when we look deeper at what causes that fear of loss, we see the things that money represents, which may be freedom, control, dependency, security, and self-worth. And many of these things have been passed down from our parents. So as we look at why we struggle financially and why we make some of the decisions, it's important to take a step back and look at our parents and how they related to money and how they taught us to relate to money. And also some of the self-defeating belief systems that people have, the negative thinking, that chatter in the back of your mind that says, hey, you know, this is all you can do, or, you know, you can't do that. Well, really, when you look at the low self-esteem, the lack of belief in one's own ability, that fear of success, that fear of failure, all of these things lead to procrastination and a reluctance to seek help. And when we looked at the differences between those clients that were extremely successful and those clients that struggled initially, even when they were given great information, it doesn't matter if it's financial or health-related information, there's always probably one of three phrases that comes up. One is, yes, but, there's always that but, or that won't work for me, I prefer to do it my way, and then there also might be that, I'm not ready now, but maybe next month or next year. And all of these things, and these are situations that don't require money where you hear this. And a lot of that comes back to some of those fears that we talked about. And it also shows us that many of these are signs of psychological barriers that people are experiencing, not the lack of money, time, and the other reasons that they give themselves. So it's important for us to really look at some of those psychological barriers. And I'll just make one other point. One of the differences between what some of our wealthier clients do and some of the others who struggle financially is that they surround themselves with a team of people who help to eliminate some of those fears and, I guess, emotional reactions to situations. That way they can separate the emotion from the financial decisions that they have to make. But when you look at the average individual, they really don't have someone who's holding them accountable to making smarter financial decisions or someone who can help them remove the emotion from a lot of those decisions.
You know, I have to agree with everything you said, because when I actually think about my situation, I mean, I didn't come from a rich, powerful family who had tons of money, but my father was a hard worker, and my mother stayed at home for a while until, you know, then she started working. But, you know, my father did try to teach us some, you know, basic principles, but, you know, they struggled, just like most American families, middle class, lower middle class or whatever, they struggled. But when I think about my attitude toward money, William, my attitude toward money has never been one of worry or you know, oh, I can't pay my bills. I've never, ever looked at money that way, and I've never had major money problems.
Definitely, definitely. And I'll tell you, there was one other thing, huge insight that came out of this for me, and that was when I had to turn everything around and really point the microscope at myself, and I had to look at what were the limitations that I had compared to some of my mentors and advisors who were running, you know, $100 million and billion-dollar companies. Right. You know, how did they wake up every morning and approach a situation, and how is that different than how I approach a situation? And so I had to consistently look at that, and I had to look at what were some of my limiting beliefs and emotional barriers compared to some of my mentors and advisors. And when I looked at that, I started to see opportunities to break through, and they led to some significant breakthroughs. So I would encourage you, no matter where you are, to take whatever dream or goal you have, make it 10 times bigger, and to surround yourself with people who are going to challenge you, people who are doing larger deals and who have access to greater opportunities, experiences, and even financial resources. You know, there's the old saying, you know, if you're hanging around 9 broke people, you're bound to be the 10th one. So, you know, really look for ways in which you can change the people that you spend the majority of your time with if you're looking for a way to increase your net worth. Your network is a direct reflection of your net worth. Now, that doesn't mean you have to cut off everybody you know, but it's important to manage those relationships if changing your financial condition is something that's important to you.
Now, William, let me ask you, I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here, and because I totally agree with everything you just stated. Let's just say, and actually it's true, some people are so stuck in their habits and their ruts, routines, comfort zone, whatever term you want to put on it, they're so stuck. What are some of the first small, teeny tiny little steps that they can make to start climbing out of that deep hole, deep rut that they're in? Because you have to make some behavioral changes.
Well, that's a great question. And there's actually something that's called the law of holes. And that law says
what?
The law of holes, like a hole in the ground, the law of holes. And that law of holes says, if you're in a hole, stop digging. That's the first rule. Stop making the situation worse and continuing to dig that hole. And one of the first things you want to do is to get some help. It's going, you know, you wouldn't, no sooner would you try to operate on yourself should you try to solve your own financial situation. There are people who can help you. There are a lot of resources that can help you, and many of them free. So if you are a person and you're dealing with massive debt, let's say more than 20% of your take-home pay is going toward debt, you are a candidate for credit counseling or a debt management plan. So you can look at potentially exploring a nonprofit credit counseling service who can help you negotiate with your creditors to lower your interest rates, to lower your monthly payments. And, again, if you go to the free resources section of BaronSeries.com, you can find a nonprofit credit counseling service in your area, and they get paid on the back end. They don't get paid up front. So at least how most of them work. they get paid on the back end. So there really is no excuse for you being able to get help. There are a lot of great resources, and again, many of them are free, that can help you. And if you're a person on the other side of the coin, there are also a lot of great resources that can show you how to further leverage many of the opportunities that are now presenting themselves in this market. Because I always say that in a situation where there's an economic downturn, and people tend to have more problems. So if you focus more on solving problems for people, you see huge opportunities in this market.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, William, one of the things, and I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people say, as we've been talking, that I just don't have the opportunities because of the way the market is. But if you do your research and if you pay attention, there's always that niche. There's always that something that you can do. Do you have to have an attitude of coming out of that comfort zone and maybe doing some research or experimenting? Maybe you're changing a field. Are those some of the things that you have to do to get yourself out of the situation, or do you just, like you just mentioned, you know, stop digging the hole, look for some help, and then stay where you are and work your way up? I mean, because there are a lot of folks that will say, I'll walk away from where I am right now and do something different, because doing something different is where my solutions are.
Well, Tony, you made a number of really powerful points there. And I always say that there are two things that you can easily turn into a viable income opportunity for yourself, or a viable business. The first thing that you can turn into a viable business is your passion, or the thing that you have a natural aptitude and skill at doing. If you've ever done anything successfully in your life and you're also passionate about it, you can turn that into a viable business. Right. The other thing that you can turn into a viable business is your problems. And every now and then you'll meet someone that says, there's really nothing in my life that I'm particularly passionate about, which I always find hard to believe. But for those people that typically say that, they usually have a lot of problems. So they're in luck too. They can turn those into a viable business. And I'll give you a specific example. One of our clients was a young lady. Her name is Sasha Adi. She runs a nonprofit organization for women with a condition called polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is an endocrine disorder that affects about 1 in 10 women. It's one of the leading causes of infertility, leads to other conditions such as depression, anxiety, infertility, diabetes, et cetera. Well, when she was diagnosed with this condition, she had a full-time career as a microbiologist, and what she decided to do was to turn this situation, which most would view as an adverse situation or a problem, into an opportunity to help the millions of other women with this condition, polycystic ovarian syndrome. So as she looked out, she was trying to find all these resources and solutions. She couldn't find them. So what she did is she formed this nonprofit organization. She came to me to help her really get the organization off the ground, raise funding for it. And one of the unique things about our business coaching program and our wealth coaching program is we have a lot of different accelerators that can help a person build a business fairly rapidly. So within less than a year, she built that nonprofit organization, over 5,000 members. She started a radio show. I'm also executive producing her television show. She's been able to pull in tens of thousands of dollars in corporate sponsorship. She has been able to help so many women by turning this situation, which normally would have been viewed as an obstacle, into an opportunity to help others. So, for instance, we gave her one letter, which is an accelerator that we have in our program, which in 15 minutes helped her pull in a four-figure corporate sponsorship deal. So there are people and there are resources that can help you, and you can also turn those obstacles into opportunities to help other people. So look at your passion and your problems as opportunities to transform not only your life, but to create value and benefit for other people, which becomes the means for you to build wealth.
Great.
Yeah,
great.
I have to totally agree with you on that one, because I actually have met several people who fall in that category, and that's actually what inspired them to step out and do similar things to what you described about the ovarian, I don't know the technical name.
PCOS,
I've heard of it.
Right.
I've heard of it. But, they've been in abusive situations, or they were sexually molested as a child, or whatever the case may be, and it really does inspire them to want to step out and become an advocate and become a person who, because when you speak from the heart, about a situation that you've experienced, I think it's a lot more effective that you're going to help someone else than if you're speaking from because you learned it in school and you're just regurgitating it from a book.
Absolutely. And you realize what you're doing is bigger than you. And that's
right.
Why when Sasha and actually many of the women who are participating on the television show, they say, wow, you know, I wasn't sure I wanted to, quote, put my business in the street or reveal all of the intimate details of my life and my condition. But when I realized that what I was doing would help thousands and potentially millions of women bring additional resources and support, there's one young lady, one of the other symptoms of PCOS is a condition called hirsutism, which is excessive hair growth. And her sister has the condition a little more severely than she, it has a more severe case of the condition than she does. But she said, you know, I wanted to do this because I wanted to inspire my sister and perhaps give my sister some additional hope that there are solutions out here and there are people that are willing to help us. So, you know, we've been able to get, you know, everyone from presidential cabinet members to New York Times best-selling authors to help donate their time and support of this project because of the need. And this is just one example of looking at your skills, looking at some of the issues and challenges. One of the things that Tony mentioned is that, you know, do you have to find something that's unique? And quite honestly, no. If you look at many of the businesses that are out there, they're not that unique. It's helpful if you have some unique way in which you deliver the solution, but you can compete in what are known as commodity markets where you're selling products and services that are essentially undifferentiated. And the way that you can compete, number one, is with a brand. You look at brands like Tiffany, the jeweler. Tiffany's may be selling the same jewelry as the store on the corner, but because they have such a strong brand, they can charge 10 times the markup. The other way in which you compete is by doing a better and a clearer job of explaining the rational and emotional benefits of your product or your service. I'm sure Kathy and Tony, you've been online and tried to buy a product, and you couldn't even figure out what the product was supposed to do, you know, much less they actually told you enough to make an informed decision. So just by doing a better job with your marketing and your branding, you can certainly compete even if you don't have this, quote, original breakthrough idea.
Right, absolutely.
And, you know, and I want to make a comment about something you said, Tony. You may have started it, but William, then you picked it up about, you know, the young lady you mentioned about starting the nonprofit organization that she was a little reluctant about putting her business out. But I have found that when you are transparent, or the more transparent you are when you're doing something like that, or when you're doing something like what I do. You know, that when you're transparent and you allow people to see that you're human, that you've had experiences and you're willing to share your experiences, that makes your brand stronger as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Transparency builds trust, and a lot of people look at what you do and they say, wow, this person is human. They're just like me, and they've overcome adversity and circumstances that were more severe than my own. And if they were able to do it, I'm able to do it. So that story definitely transcends and becomes a huge message and a hallmark for so many people. But I also wanted to come back to this point that Tony made earlier where a lot of people are not sure about that opportunity. And this is also something that we talk to a lot of young people about in our Barron Young Millionaires program where they may say, I'm young, I'm Latino, or I'm an African-American, or I'm a female, and people tend to ignore me. You know, will they take my idea seriously? Well, I always say that if people are ignoring you, chances are they're also ignoring that market, and that points to a huge opportunity for you to create a business or a product or a service that serves that particular market or fills that void. And you saw this with things like Radio One. You saw this with Black Entertainment Television. When people are ignoring a market, it can potentially become a billion-dollar opportunity.
That's right.
Absolutely. Now, I want to ask you this. A lot of folks, particularly folks that are taking a step out there or are thinking about it, one of the I really don't want to say hindrances, but I guess a challenge is you hear people say this all the time. You've got to have money to make money. You've got to, you know, you've got to have that capital to get it moving. But you hear stories all the time about folks that started a business with a few thousand dollars or a couple of dollars, or they grew the ideas. What do you say to those individuals that think you have to have a whole lot to start something? Because most folks don't move because they don't think they have what they need to move on whatever they're doing.
Well, that's another great question, and it's actually a question I just addressed in my last newsletter. So, you know, I'll take this time to shatter two myths about business financing. And the first myth is that you can't get money to start your business. There are hundreds of billions of dollars in financing available in many different forms, and this comes from corporate sponsorship, government grants, foundation grants, business loans, trade lines of credit, strategic partnerships, private investment. You know, there's a long list of capital that is available to start a business. And when it comes to this concept of it takes money to make money, I always tell people it may take money to make money, but it doesn't always take your money to make money. And this is where getting some help and getting some assistance to choose the right form of business financing at the right time. Because a lot of people choose the wrong type of financing. So, for instance, they may choose to pull in an equity partner or someone who gets a stock position in the business, and they do that too early in the business's stage of development. So they end up giving away, you know, 60 to 90% of their company instead of perhaps pulling in using business credit or using business loans and trade lines of credit to get the business to a certain point where they might have been able to reduce that outside investor's position to 20 or 30% of the business. So there are a lot of great resources that are available to people. And, again, we have a lot of great free resources that show you how to tap into these, as well as coaching programs that show you how to pull in corporate sponsorship, government grants, and so forth. But there are, again, hundreds of billions of dollars available in financing for new and established companies. But I always point out that financing follows three things. Number one is a proven business model. So you want to make sure that you have a proven, scalable business model, meaning something that is duplicable, something that can be replicated in different markets. It also follows experience management, and you want to make sure that you have some people on your team who have some experience or knowledge in doing what it is that you're trying to do. Don't just try to do it all yourself and expect to be able to attract some financing. And then the third thing that is going to follow is the strategic, not strategic partnerships, but rather sound financial statements. So you have to have those sound financial projections that are going to make sense and actually have an exit strategy for your investors. Those are the three things. Again, a proven, scalable business model, experience management, and those financial projections, or sound financial fundamentals with the business. Now, the second myth that I want to shatter around business financing is this concept that if I have more money, it's going to solve all of my business problems. We have found that most entrepreneurs, when they get more money, they end up in more financial trouble because they don't have those three things. Again, the proven scalable business model, the experience management, and those sound financial fundamentals. So those are two important points to make. But again, there are hundreds of billions of dollars, so they're really, if you choose the right team at the right time, there is no excuse for not being able to tap into that and grow your business.
Now, gotcha. Now William, I'm just trying to think like the average listener who may be listening to my show or who may download archives. What you said makes perfect sense, you know, having a sound business model. I totally get that. What if someone listening is wondering how their own personal credit score might play into that?
Well, great question. And if you, again, get some help and you structure your business the right way, what you do is you create an entity which is separate from you personally. So when you form an entity like a corporation, a limited liability company, a limited partnership, et cetera, or a limited partnership, when you form an entity that is, it becomes almost like a separate person. And that separate person develops its own credit score. And this is how you build business credit or trade lines of credit for your business. So even if your personal credit is horrible, you can still build credit under this entity if you structure it the right way. And you can get trade lines of credit. You can get corporate credit cards. So if you need to go get that laptop from, you know, Dell Computer, or you need to go get office supplies from, you know, whatever Office Depot or Staples, you can get credit in the name of the business that is separate from your personal credit. And we encourage you to do it this way because if something happens to the business, you don't want people coming after your personal assets like your home and your car. That's why it is important for you to structure your business the right way. And I'll just tell you another brief story. There was a young lady who was in one of my real estate workshops, and she had just gone through bankruptcy. She had, you know, tried to do some real estate investing on her own and didn't have quite all the information that she needed, and she ended up with 2 foreclosures on her personal credit report. You don't want to do these things in your own name if you can avoid them. You want to do them under a business, and you want to build business credit that is independent of your own personal credit. That way you don't have to worry about those things.
Very good point. Now, okay, you mentioned the big B word, so I'm going to have to take you back.
Okay.
And ask you about the big B word, bankruptcy, because I know there are a lot of people who are going to be listening who have had to do that.
Right.
Because they lost their jobs and, you know, their finances were just really, really severe in the worst way. So how can they start to, you know, rebound from bankruptcy?
Well, another great story I love to tell, which I actually told to the young lady. Yes, I told to the young lady who was in the real estate workshop, is that I always say that for most people, a job is a $50,000 solution to a $1 million problem. And if you have a $1 million problem, you, of course, have to use a $1 million solution. And the biggest things that we encourage people to do are budgeting and investing as the fastest way to turn around their financial situation after a major setback like a bankruptcy. And the reason we tell you to do that is because not all income is created equal, and you have the ability to go after what we would call passive and residual income streams, where you do something once and get paid for them over and over and over again, as opposed to what's known as linear or earned income, which is what you typically receive from a job. So when you get hired to do a job, what happens is they will say, you know, you make this amount of money a month or a year, and that's pretty much it. You might get a little bit of a bonus at the end of the year, but they more or less have a cap on the amount of money that you can make unless you're in some type of sales position or something. But for the most part, there's a cap. But when you have your own business, there is no real cap to the amount of money that you can make. But coming back to this story, which I also like to tell, it was when Donald Trump had just gone through bankruptcy. And he was walking down the street with his daughter, and he pointed to a homeless person. He said, you know what? That homeless person is worth more money than I am. And that was a really powerful statement for me because what it said is it points out the relative nature of debt. So no matter what your situation is, you maybe say, wow, I'm $50,000 in debt or I'm $100,000 in debt. Well, imagine being $500,000. Imagine being $1 million, $10 million, $100 million, or $1 billion in debt. And I tell you, whatever amount of debt you know you likely have listening to this show, Donald Trump would have jumped up and down if he had the amount of debt that you had. And the young lady who was listening, who had just gone through bankruptcy, she said, well, Donald Trump has more resources than I do. And I told her, I said, that's exactly the point. Donald Trump is not trying to get out of $1 billion worth of debt with a $50,000 job. So you have to use some different thinking and some different strategies to turn around your financial situation. And the thinking that got you into that situation is not going to be the same thinking that's necessary to get you out. So that's why it is important for you to, again, get some advisors, get some coaches that are going to be able to help you to use some different strategies with some new accelerators and some new tools and resources to turn that situation around faster. And there are ways for you to do it. There is hope. And, you know, but you don't want to continue to do the same thing that got you into the situation to try to turn it around.
Yeah. Now let me turn the conversation a little bit to individuals who are just working class individuals who are, you know, trying to just live an ordinary life, pay their bills, and, you know, have a reasonable amount of income. I mean, they're not totally struggling, but they're not totally comfortable either. Talk a little bit about what it means to pay yourself first, because I try to explain that concept to people, and I'm not claiming to be a financial person. I'm not a financial advisor, and I'm not a financial expert. So I try to explain it the best I can, but for our listeners, could you please explain what that means in a nice, easy-to-understand manner?
Sure. Well, for most people, the concept of pay yourself first means that you want to make sure that you are investing a portion of your income or saving a portion of your income before you do anything else, before you pay the bill collector, before you pay the mortgage, before you pay, you know, all these other, you know, people. You want to make sure that you put some money into your saving or investment account first. And this also brings back this concept or this survey that came out, and it was a survey that was done from Harris Interactive. And this is pretty interesting because it was a survey that was done of high-wage earners. These are people who are making over $100,000 a year. And what they found is that even of people who are making over $100,000 a year, 20% were living paycheck to paycheck, and 30% were saving less than $250 a month. And then 18% of them could only continue their lifestyle for a month or for only a month if they lost their job. So I'm going to repeat that. Of these high-wage earners who are making over $100,000 a year, 20% of them were living paycheck to paycheck, 30% of them saved less than $250 a month, and only 18% of them could continue their lifestyle for a month if they lost their job. So this comes back to this concept of more money does not solve your financial problems. It's developing these sound financial habits. So one of the things that we encourage people to do is to maintain certain ratios no matter how much money they're making. Whether these are tens of thousands of dollars or tens of millions of dollars, you always want to maintain at least a 70-15-15 ratio where you're living on 70% or less of your income. 15% of that income is going toward investing or saving, and then 15% or less is going toward paying down debt. Once you've paid down your debt, you want to eventually move toward investing up to 30% of your income. Now, this is, again, an expansion of this concept of pay yourself first. You always want to make sure that you're paying yourself that 15 to 30% of your income is going toward investing. Now, there are some people listening to this who are saying, well, that sounds great, but, you know, I've got some negative cash flow and the bill collector's at my door. I'd love to pay myself first, but I don't want to be homeless. In those instances, or in the instances where you're very close to retirement, we encourage you to focus on developing more of a cash flow portfolio where you focus on creating and acquiring assets that produce income and getting that income stream to surpass your expenses. That way you own your time, and then you can focus on building up this large nest egg. The way most people teach financial planning and financial retirement strategies, they make you poorer in retirement. They teach you to build up this large nest egg, and most people need about a nest egg of $1 to $2 million in order to live on about 80% of their pre-retirement income. Now, most people are going to be nowhere near that, and you know, most people will be lucky if they have 60% of their pre-retirement income. Now, I know a lot of people have very difficult time living on 100% of their income, so taking a 40% pay cut is just not going to make it. So what we encourage people to do, again, is build up the cash flow. Look for some of these asset-based income streams. And, again, these are things that can be developed through starting your own business, royalties and revenues from intellectual property, books, music, CDs, direct sales and network marketing program. I know for a lot of people those have a bad name, but, you know, there are some ways in which you can do it and make it work. Online businesses that you can automate, rental real estate, business-based income streams, insurance-based income streams. There are a lot of options that can help you build up the cash flow. So if you can't get to that $1 to $2 million, but you have expenses of $5,000 a month and you can build up $5,000 or $6,000 of asset-based income, you at least own your time and can focus on that multi-million dollar idea or that great business idea that you have.
That's a good idea because the one thing I was thinking as you were saying that, One of the drawbacks in many folks, they'll give you that attitude that, okay, I'm going to do the 70-15-15. I'm going to pay myself. But because I'm living paycheck to paycheck and because of the way that I live, even if I stash that cash, even if I put it away, I'm going to have to eventually go get it because I'm not really saving it because I'm not paying and taking care of business like I should.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things, let me just run through real quick. We've identified some ways that nearly anyone can find somewhere in the neighborhood of $500 to $6,000 a year in their family budget to invest. And most people are sitting on income and sitting on savings, but they're throwing it away using poor financial habits, with poor financial habits and poor financial decisions. We say with every dollar you are choosing to be rich or poor. Again, with every dollar you are choosing to be rich or poor. So as we look at some of the ways in which you can find that several hundred to several thousand dollars a year, number one would be to consolidate your debt. And this can save you several thousand dollars a year in interest charges. This means moving your debt from higher interest rate credit cards to lower interest rate credit cards and lower interest rate terms or loans with lower interest rate terms. Also, again, as I mentioned, if more than 20% of your take-home pay is going toward credit card debt, you are a candidate for credit counseling or perhaps a debt management plan, which, again, can reduce your monthly payment and the amount you owe or the interest rate on what you owe. You can also do comparison shopping, buy products in bulk. This can easily save you over $1,000 a year, depending on where you are. If you have Sam's Club, Costco, Pete's, you know, any of these wholesale clubs can save you up to $1,000 a year. So, you know, rather than just going to the local store because it's convenient, look to do online comparison shopping, places like Price Grabber, et cetera, where you can compare between multiple online stores. This can save you a lot of money. Also, consolidating services, things like consolidating your phone, cable service, internet service with the same provider, looking at alternative services like a Magic Jack or Skype. These things can help you save up to $500 a year. Moving your money from from under the mattress and the shoebox and the coin jar, any of that kind of stuff, to a high-yield checking or money market account can add an additional $100 to $200 to your savings account a year. And, again, you can go on BaronSeries.com in the free resources section, and you can do some comparisons to find many of the highest interest rate checking, savings, and money market accounts in the country. Also, reexamine your insurance coverage by doing this a couple of times, you know, once or twice a year, and potentially switching if some savings and the coverage is the same. This can save you anywhere from $250 to several thousand dollars a year. Starting a side or home-based business. Not only can this be very profitable for you, but it can also save you several thousand dollars in tax deductions every year, and you can take advantage of this money now by getting with your tax preparer, your accountant, or so forth, and adjusting your withholdings based on these new tax deductions. It can, you know, add anywhere from $50 to, you know, $100 to $200 to your paycheck every pay period. And then also just doing better planning, avoiding the bounce check fees, the late fees, the parking tickets, and the high cost of booking last minute travel. We are throwing away thousands of dollars every year that is already at our disposal that we could be using to invest. So, you know, when we look at a person's budget, we typically see that there is a lot of fat in there that could be trimmed to help turn around their financial situation.
And I'm just going to add one more item to that. Well, you actually gave a lot of great suggestions as to how you can save yourself money. But to back up just a step, to even know where your money is going, start keeping a spending log. If you start keeping a journal of every single dollar that goes out the door, I mean every single dollar, I don't care how small it is. When you stop to get gas, if you go in and buy a thing of bottled water, put it down.
Absolutely.
And then that will at least give you an idea of how much you're actually spending, because a lot of people, they just don't even think about a lot of the things that they spend money on. They don't think about that 80 cents or that $1.20. They don't even think about it, and that stuff adds up.
It definitely does. But, you know, one of the things I always want to point out to people is that this is only one side of the coin. You know, this is only one thing that you should be focused on. And this is for the people that want to be comfortable. You know, I always say that you don't just want to focus on cutting costs, because just like a major company, there's only so far you can cut costs without, affecting the business or your quality of life. So you need to focus on ways to increase your income and to increase, if you're talking about business, increase the profitability of that business. There was one I was on some radio show. It was a panel, and the lady was saying, you know, hey, don't go get your hair done, and, you know, you can wear a wig or a weave instead. And, you know, I don't believe in reducing your quality of life. I believe in, you know, raising the income that you can produce so that you can live how you want to live. Now, that doesn't mean that you go out and you live beyond your means, but I don't believe in reducing your quality of life. You know, we have a very short time on this earth, and I want you to enjoy it to the fullest within reason. And I want you to focus. So, you know, instead of, you know, quote, wearing the weave, figure out how to get your hair done, but do it in a way that you may be doing a television show, and it makes sense and is paid for you to do that. So, you know, that's what you want to focus on, is ways in which you can increase your income, not necessarily how can I, you know, count every penny or cut costs to the point that I'm living a miserable life and I'm very angry. So, you know, live how you want to live. You know, again, our approach is called the Barron Solution. It's not just about how do you earn a few more dollars a month and become a millionaire. It's about how do you tap into your great idea, live your passion, bring in other people to support that, and create a legacy for future generations. So what we teach is a higher level of consciousness when it comes to wealth building and financial planning. So, again, think about how can you, you know, live the life you want, not just cut costs.
Right. Now, William, I'm going to ask you a question. This is not my question, okay? I'm going to tell you that right now. It's from my brother. I'm not going to call his name out on the air because I have several brothers. But I don't even know if there's an answer for this question. I mean, I could tell him what I think, but he has a problem in that he has four daughters, and they are always, one of them is always asking him for money. And he wants me to ask you, do you have any suggestions on how he can manage that situation because it keeps him broke?
Great question. And I'll tell you what my father did for me when I was a young kid. I remember asking for allowance. I was about 6 or 8 years old. And one of the things he taught me how to do, he taught me how to, quote, recycle cans. So, and I'm not saying he needs to teach his daughter how to recycle cans, but just the point of the story is that he said, I want to teach you how to see value in things that other people can't see. So he taught me how to go out and negotiate with schools for their cans. I taught other neighborhood kids how to do this. So as a 6 and 8 year old kid, I had several hundred dollars a month from, you know, recycling these cans and had a business. Other things he taught me how to do were, you know, I used to collect comic books as a kid. He taught me how to inventory the comic books, appraise the value. There were other things I did. I sold candy when I was at school. I used to undercut the local corner store. My father taught me how to go buy candy in bulk from places like Cracker Barrel and then come to school and sell that. Again, it wasn't great for their dental bills, but, you know, it was a way for me to understand how I could turn the things that I liked into an opportunity to create a business. One of the other things I asked him for, I remember, it was a pair of Nikes. They're about a $200 pair of Nikes with a pump on them. And he said, well, come here, I want to show you something. So he pulled up a stock chart for Nike, and the stock had nearly doubled over a couple of years. And then I remember him pointing to a beat-up pair of shoes that I had in the corner. He said, how much do you think that beat-up pair of shoes is worth? I said, probably next to nothing. And he said, so what would you rather have, the stock or the pair of shoes? And again, it was at that point that I understood with every dollar I was choosing to be rich or poor, and that I could make money by not just becoming the consumer who bought all of these different products, but by being the investor who would invest in those different products and eventually becoming the company that manufactured those products and encouraged outside investors to invest in my businesses. So that was, you know, one of the things that led me to start a clothing line and all these other different types of businesses. So I would look at ways in which you can take the things that your daughter may be passionate about and say, this is how you can turn that into an opportunity. What is it that your friends are out there buying? Maybe these are companies that you should be investing in or products that you should be creating to serve that type of market. So, again, helping her to see that there's an opportunity from moving from being a consumer to being an investor and an entrepreneur.
I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, because I know sometimes it's difficult for parents. My father was very similar to, you know, what you described as your father, and he was very he loved to teach. You know, he loved to teach. Whenever you would ask a question, he would always, you know, teach or answer it back with a question to teach you something, you know, especially about money. Oh my gosh, he taught me a lot about money. But I know a lot of people don't have access to, you know, that type of information. But it's a good piece of advice, because anybody who may be listening to this show or who may listen to the download, the archive, can begin to start doing those types of things, especially if they have children who are younger. And even if you have adult children, it's never too late.
You're absolutely right, and that's one of the things that we encourage parents and grandparents to do. A parent or a grandparent who sets up a custodial account and invests $25 a month for their six-year-old child can set that child up can set that child up to be a millionaire by the time they retire. But if that same child waits until the age of, let's say, 21, it'll take $75 a month. But if that child waits until the age of 50, it takes over $2,000 a month. So if you are a parent or a grandparent, you really want to begin to set your children up to instill these great habits, because these are the things that are going to stick with them for life. And we always encourage, there are about five things that we encourage parents to teach their children and grandparents to teach their children. One is the law of expectation. And we teach that you want to always teach a child that great wealth is their destiny. So you want to instill that law of expectation, that things, positive things, will happen, and that you want to expect that, not to expect scarcity and the scarcity and this idea of lack. You also want to teach them the law of leverage, again, understanding that not all income is created equal, and that you want to, if you're going to work hard for residual and passive income. That way you do something once and get paid for it over and over and over again, as opposed to having to trade your time for money. Also being able to leverage other relationships. But the third law is what we call the law of allotment, which is, again, saving and investing before you spend, as you mentioned, paying yourself first. The fourth law is the law of association, that, again, your network is a direct reflection of your net worth. And one of the fastest ways for you to change your net worth is to change the people that you spend the majority of your time with. If you say, I don't know, you know, all my friends are broke, all the people I know are broke, look to attend some networking conferences. These are ways in which you can start to build some relationships. If you say, wow, the networking conference is going to cost me several hundred or several thousand dollars, what you can do, if there's a person you want to meet, you can reach out to that person, ask for 15 minutes, 30 minutes, buy them lunch, buy them dinner, and you can build a relationship with that person. I always encourage you to show up and identify some value that you can add to that person, whether it is an income opportunity, a PR opportunity, whether it's supporting their favorite cause or charity. But you always want to show up and identify how you can create some value and benefit, as opposed to showing up with an I need or I want mentality. And then the last thing that I encourage parents and grandparents to teach their children is what we call the law of reciprocity. And that involves teaching others, giving back to others, investing in organizations that help others. But these five laws, the law of expectation, the law of leverage, the law of allotment, the law of association, and the law of reciprocity, those are things that will transform your child's life, and not only theirs, but the generations to come. So those are always the things that we encourage people to learn and adopt as a part of their wealth building and financial practice.
Well, those are absolutely all fantastic, and I'm just, you know, going to add my own little quick little personal story. One of the things that I have always, only because it was passed down to me, my father taught me as much as he possibly could, you know, with his knowledge, and I think I have 12, 13 nieces. I don't know, I lost count, but I have tons. And one of the things I've always tried to do is whenever there is a significant occasion, whether it's a sweet 16, a graduation from high school, graduation from college, whatever the case may be, I would always try to start them out by buying a few shares of stock. just to introduce them to, and I always make sure that it's a company that they do a lot of purchasing from, like you mentioned about the Nikes earlier, just to give them a lesson in how you invest in these companies. And then, you know, as your life goes on, you know, you continue to invest and, like you said, branch out and maybe do your own thing with your own passion. So that's one of the things that I – and that's really not that hard to do. I mean, you can go buy a couple of shares of stock here or there just to kind of get the point across, just to teach them, you know, that you need to own stock. You need to invest in stock. You need to invest, period. And, you know, there's many different ways. That's just how I did it in my family. But there's many different ways that you can do it to start teaching your family and your children.
You're absolutely right. There are a lot of great companies and ways in which you can do that. There are the company, which is OneShare, and you can also find out more information about them on our site, BarronSeries.com. But OneShare, you can buy one share of stock. So whether that stock is Disney or, you know, Harley Davidson, you know, whatever, you know, your child happens to be into, you can find typically at least get them one share of stock in that company. You also, if you want to buy partial shares, you don't have that much to invest, you can set up, you know, again, that custodial account. You can also set up custodial accounts with places like Ariel Capital. Again, if you go to the free resources section, you can find different companies where you can invest as little as $50 a month, you know, with your child as part of these different accounts, whether these are education IRAs to help pay for their college education and their schooling. There are a lot of ways in which you can begin to teach that. And I'll just tell one last story, which is, one of the ways in which I learned a lot about entrepreneurship, and most importantly, the power of networking, and that was a friend of mine in high school. He had a very strong network, and because of that network, he was able to throw parties in high school, and this guy used to make over $100,000 in high school as a 16, 17-year-old kid. He was making more than most of our parents because of the power of his network. And he was only working a few days a week. Again, this is this concept of leverage and understanding how to really use relationships to create an experience, to create an event that people value. And he later went on to become one of the top managers and producers of many big hip-hop acts. But, you know, you can use those similar types of lessons and networks and relationships to help you to live your dream and live the life that you want. Because I hear time and time again people saying, I hate my job, I hate what I do, I really want to, you know, live my passion. We'll start early and don't take on, you know, the tremendous amount of debt and buy all these things that depreciate in value. Invest in those things that produce income for you.
That's right. And, William, we're coming up on our last 60 seconds on the show, and I tell you, I want to make sure, give us your website. It's I just put it in the chat room. It's BarronSeries.com, www.BarronSeries.com. Is that correct?
Yes, BarronSeries.com. People can also call toll-free 888-90-BARRON. That's 888-90-BARON.
Perfect. William, thank you ever so kindly. You have been a wealth of knowledge, as I knew you would be, and I wanted my last show for the month of March, the theme, financial fitness, to be powerful, and you have done just that. So thank you.
Kathy and Tony, my pleasure, anytime.
All right.
Thank you.
Excellent. We are going to sign off for now, and we will be back next week with our theme for April, which is Get Motivated. So everything you heard tonight, get ready, get motivated, and get that going. Thank you, everyone. Have a blessed week. I'm Kathy Holloway-Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
Good night, everyone.